Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Here around Dog Nation, we do a lot of shows. And my hope is, as kind of the person that I guess kind of leads the way on the broadcast front of all of this, that the shows actually feel like shows. That means they ought to be entertaining. We shouldn't take ourselves too seriously. There ought to be some element of surprise associated with all of this. And you certainly got that last night on Cover 4 Live when, out of nowhere, I didn't know this. I still don't quite know from the rest of our team who did know this and didn't. Maybe I'm the only one that was set up for this to be a surprise, but I was very pleasantly surprised when former Georgia coach Mark Richt joined us during the show. It was fascinating. Richt had gotten some attention earlier in the day. It was his birthday, but he was also seen on social media sporting the Georgia G, and a lot of folks were talking about, hey, look, you know, interesting to see Richt back wearing the G again, and a lot of folks made mention of that. If you watch the full interview, and I hope that you will when I post the podcast, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger later on, I'll put a link to our Cover 4 Live broadcast from last night, but when you watch the broadcast, Richt did acknowledge, yeah, this is the first time I've been wearing a Georgia G in the last 5 years. He talked about feeling good to be able to do that. So maybe there was some symbolic value in Richt back in Georgia gear here on what he says was his 61st birthday. I think all of that is really pretty cool and really pretty fun. And for me, it kind of brings up something that, and I've said this for a while, that as a fan who kind of came of age as like a guy just out of college in the Richt era, back at a time in which I had just enough money to kind of travel around and go to games, but I was also just young enough. I didn't have a ton of responsibilities. Boy, I got just so many great memories of Georgia football during that time, of the Richt era, you know, during that time. Some of that kind of stuff is just really fun for me. And so when I think about Georgia football, as much as I'm enjoying the Kirby Smart era, and as much as I believe that Smart has Georgia on the precipice of maybe doing more than Georgia's done in an awful long time, that doesn't mean I have any less affection for the Mark Richt era. In fact, I think the Richt era ought to be appreciated. I think it ought to be celebrated. I think after, you know, Richt's time of coaching at Georgia 15 years and now 5 years away from all of that, maybe he's ready to celebrate some of that kind of stuff again, which is, I think, is really good. The Mark Richt tenure as Georgia's head coach is just a really important part of Georgia's football history. In fact, I got a chance to talk to Richt about that a little bit last night. You know, right now we're talking about Georgia and wanting to break through and winning a national championship. It's obviously been 40 years since Georgia's done that. A lot of folks wonder when it's going to be. We've talked a lot the last few days about what national media types are saying about that. But when Richt first took the Georgia job, the conversation was actually a little bit different. Obviously, Georgia fans wanted to win a national championship, but there was also discussion at that time when Richt became head coach in 2001 about the long drought of the last time Georgia had won an SEC championship. By the time Georgia got to Atlanta for the first time to play in the SEC title was 2002. By that point in time, it had been a long time, 20 years, in fact, since Georgia had won its last SEC championship. So the same way that Kirby Smart's trying to break through what has been a little bit of a glass ceiling for Georgia here as of late, Richt dealt with his own version of that when he first took the Georgia job in 2001 and then the breakthrough season there in 2002. In fact, Richt was good enough to talk about some of that last night on Cover 4 Live. Let me let you hear that now here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
It was 20 years since the last SEC championship, so that was huge. It was like the first time, you know, even though it happened many times before under Coach Dooley. But it felt like the first time. And, you know, but the game that got us there was probably more exciting than the Auburn game.
Yeah.
When we hit Michael Johnson in that left corner of the end zone on a fourth down shot where David Green did a beautiful job of pumping the ball to the right and launching it left and giving Michael a chance. And, you know, that game there was the one that got us in the game. And when we did it in, you know, really exciting fashion after playing such a horrible first half. And then John Stinchcomb giving everybody hell in the locker room. And then we rose to the occasion and won that thing in a very exciting way. So that was probably more exciting than the championship game. Winning it, the locker room in Auburn was a little more wild than the one in Atlanta.
So I know there was a little bit of interference at the beginning of that clip. That's the joys of doing things via Zoom these days. But still great to hear Rick on his birthday reflecting back on the 2002 season. And as a Georgia fan, man, it makes me so happy to know that Rick, when he thinks about that, thinks about not just the win over Arkansas in the Georgia Dome, but also, as he said, to go to Jordan-Hare Stadium and get down big deficit that day against Auburn, to come roaring back, to have the fourth down touchdown throw by David Green right there to a Michael Johnson. The fact that you can even hear that in Rick's voice, still has vivid memories of it all and still really happy about it. And I think it's an important chapter in Georgia's football history. And I think it's time to make sure that we are celebrating the coach who led that, the players who were part of that. It's nice to hear Rick talking about that last night. By the way, John Stinchcomb, of course, a regular contributor to what we do here on Dog Nation Daily. So really fun to hear Rick mentioning him and the halftime speech that he gave. We've actually heard from Stinch on this before. Terrence Edwards has told us about that there as well, that he was a pivotal part of how all of that went down and the thrilling come-from-behind late-game heroics win against Auburn back in 2002. And I asked Rick last night, you know, obviously this is a relevant conversation for Georgia right now because Georgia's also in the hopes of seeking out the kind of leaders, the ones that Shane Beamer talked about when he referenced the 2017 season when he joined Mike Griffith this past Monday. Those guys that can do it for you. The coaches don't have to be the ones who are giving the impassioned speech. Sometimes players are capable of doing that as well. I asked Rick what it felt like to see Stinchcomb do that back in 2002, and Rick said, listen, it was a nice thing to be able to see as a coach, and he knew exactly what his next move should be after hearing Stinchcomb say what he said. This is Rick again.
It was one of those times where I knew if I said anything after what Stinchcomb said, I'd have ruined it. So I just said, he said it all, man, let's go. And sometimes that's the best thing a coach could do is say, let's go, and not screw up the moment.
How can you not like Mark Richt? Really great stuff there. You should listen and watch the full interview. I know it's going to pop up on the Dog Nation video channels in various ways. Very funny story about Rick's, you know, favorite birthday meal, which to me sounds a little gross, but Rick seems to enjoy that. We had some fun about the thrown shoe for LSU against Florida. Rick's kind of talked about that a little bit. There's a lot of stuff in this interview that's worth your time. Now, let me say this. One more thing about Rick before we move on here. Fair and balanced. Listen, I know I'm a blowhard that speaks into this microphone for a living and I spew hot takes like, you know, a waterfall from time to time, but I am not a propagandist. I'm not someone who only brings his own opinion to the forefront. I'm not someone who ignores other, you know, opinions to the contrary. We try to the extent that's possible, be fair and balanced. We're not an objective show. We're a pro-Georgia show. We don't deny that. But in terms of, you know, my own personal point of view, I'm more than happy to give voice to people who feel a little bit different than me. An example of that right now. As someone who kind of considers himself the chief Gator hater, who believes that Georgia's rivalry with Florida is the program's most important, I'm also a big fan of the cocktail party, right? I like playing the games in Jacksonville. I'm a big fan of that history tradition, but also just the fun of doing all of that. And I've advocated for that game to remain in Jacksonville. A lot of Georgia fans feel the same way. It is fair to point out, though, that former Georgia coach Mark Richt does not feel that way. So as a way of being fair and balanced, kind of thing you don't get on cable news, but you do get here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, let me let you hear Rick making his case for why he doesn't think Georgia, Florida, and Jacksonville is necessarily a good idea. Rick's, of course, got a lot of credibility, and he's certainly pretty articulate when he makes his case. Here is Rick on that topic.
It's not neutral site where it is now, obviously. It's in the state of Florida. It's in Jacksonville, so it's not neutral. In my opinion. But if you want to have it in a neutral site, have it in Atlanta. That's neutral too. So, you know, in my opinion, if you're going to say, let's do a neutral site or let's keep the tradition of Jacksonville, let's at least alternate with Atlanta in the Mercedes Dome, you know, and see how neutral that feels to the Gator fans.
I mean, even as someone who doesn't necessarily agree with the point, you can't help but admire the way in which Rick makes his case for that there. It's a great interview. It was from Cover 4 Live last night. Total surprise for me. I did not know Coach Rick was coming on the show. Good job by Mike Griffith for kind of setting that up. That was a ton of fun. Now, here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, let me kind of shift gears here and do something completely different for a moment. Yesterday, I talked about a story at ESPN.com about the top newcomer for each of the way too early top 20. 25 teams, and I referenced Steve Sarkisian's departure to Alabama. His replacement, Bill O'Brien, as offensive coordinator, that was, in ESPN's mind, the top newcomer at Alabama. We kind of had our take on some of that, how it, you know, relates to Georgia. But the name from Georgia on that list was pretty interesting. It was the five-star linebacker, Smile Mondon. Harry Lowes Jr. was the writer who wrote this particular caption for ESPN.com, and he had some very good things to say about Mondon. Let me read you a couple of sentences here, then I want to talk about this. So here's what Lyle says. Linebackers Azeez Ojulari, Monty Rice, and Jermaine Johnson are all gone, opening up room for newcomers. Well, Georgia added the number one ranked prospect in the state this offseason. That's according to the ESPN rankings. In ESPN 300 linebacker Smile Mondon. He's the 11th ranked player overall in the 2021 class. Once again, these are ESPN rankings. And should have plenty of opportunities. Listen to this. This is Harry Lyles Jr. at ESPN. Smile Mondon should have plenty of opportunities to establish himself as Georgia's next great linebacker. That is Harry Lyles Jr. Over the last few days, this is one of those things that's been out there for a while. We just haven't had a chance to kind of get to yet. Over the last few days, I think it's been really interesting for me to watch the way that Georgia fans have reacted and responded to this. There's almost like a little bit of a surprise of, wow, of all the newcomers that Georgia could have, the ESPN could have mentioned for Georgia, a little bit of a surprise that it was Mondon, given the fact that I think ESPN seems to kind of misunderstand the linebacker depth in place at Georgia, that there are still guys like Adam Anderson, Nolan Smith as outside linebackers, still guys like N'Kobe Dean and others as, at the inside linebacker spot, that earning playing time as a freshman, even for a tatted recruit like Mondon, is going to be a difficult thing to do, and a lot of Georgia fans have kind of expressed that on social media and in our comment section and places such as that. However, I do have a slightly different take on this. I think the fact that Mondon has gotten as little attention from Georgia fans as he's gotten over the last few weeks, last couple of months, speaks to the growth of the Georgia program overall. There would have been a time a few years ago on shows like this when we'd be talking breathlessly about Mondon all the time, because that's what we used to do when Georgia signed a five-star linebacker. It was a very big deal. And I would suggest that in Mondon's case, it is still a very big deal. It just seems like less of a big deal because of the fact that Georgia has signed so many elite players at so many positions in recent years. So there's almost a kind of a take from Georgia fans that maybe ESPN kind of got it wrong, that they are overhyping Mondon by mentioning him those terms. Now, I don't expect, you know, Mondon to necessarily step on the field and, to use the quote from ESPN, be the next great linebacker Georgia right away. Man, I think Mondon's a pretty good prospect, and more than a pretty good prospect. I think he's an excellent prospect, the kind of guy who could have big things happen for him at Georgia. And it just shows the overall program depth with the Dogs right now that someone like Mondon could ever become kind of out of sight, out of mind for Georgia fans, because UGA fans are paying more attention to the depth that already exists for the Dogs. Very interesting. A lot of Georgia fans think ESPN may have jumped the gun by touting Mondon in this way. But the truth is, when it's all said and done, maybe the worldwide leader isn't so wrong about Mondon after all. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Kroger, and we're glad to have you with us today. No matter how you get to us, on video, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, we're on the radio at noon, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref podcast, however you want to find them. Well, of course, I should have mentioned the video stuff on Twitch now. That's a ton of fun. Appreciate all of the folks watching us on Twitch. We're just having a really good time doing this on as many platforms as we can find. We got new ones coming in the days ahead. We're just trying to blaze as many trails and make this show fun and entertaining and kind of a place we can all get together and talk some Georgia football. So we appreciate you being here for it, and we appreciate our friends at Kroger for making it all possible. Don't forget Kroger as you head towards the weekend, and of course, kind of getting bundled up. It's been cold. Those winter meals, I'm talking about pork back ribs, New York strip steaks, all those things that kind of make you feel good at home, you know, kind of nice comfort food on days when it's cold outside. Kroger's got great savings and all that, and they can help you with your meal planning prep there as well. They're taking really good care of you, so find out more about that when you stop by and visit your local Kroger today. Really good stuff from our friends there. All right, coming up in just a couple of minutes, we got Jeff Sintel. Looking forward to doing a whole bunch with him. There's actually a lot of UGA recruiting news that Jeff's been covering on the site over the course of the last few days, and I can't wait to do all of that with him in just a moment. Before that, though, let me do a very quick version of Around the Doghouse here, and it is really interesting. We have got a lot of Georgia stuff kind of taking place this weekend. And I want to kind of get to some of that. I also want to briefly mention that we had a good story at DogNation.com yesterday looking at the attendance situation for G-Day. Tickets will be $10. They've been free in the past. They are $10 right now. That money going to a charitable cause. And also who gets access to these tickets. This is worth seeing at DogNation.com if you haven't done that already. So Hartman Fund donors who had the Vanderbilt game, but just the Vanderbilt game, and obviously they didn't get to go, they're going to get some sort of priority here. Folks who converted some of their balance towards the COVID UGA Athletics Fund, they're going to get some priority here. Obviously, McGill Society is in this mix. But it was kind of nice yesterday to hear some specifics on exactly who is going to get priority on these, you know, 20 to 25,000 G-Day tickets that will be available there. This is frankly too much for me to try to read all to you. You wouldn't understand it if I did. It's a lot to process. But check out the story at DogNation.com. We do have some more specifics coming up about G-Day attendance that is certainly worth paying attention to. Here's what else is worth paying attention to. I said this after the Georgia basketball win against Missouri, that my only wish when it comes to stuff like this is, can we just see teams like Georgia basketball and the other non-football teams in Georgia, can we just set up a scenario where they're playing games that matter? That's what's important to me. Obviously, eventually you'd love to go to the Final Four, cut down nets, things like that. But the first step towards that is, can you just play games that matter? And based on the way that Georgia's played as of late, what, winning four of the last six, beating a ranked team earlier this week, the game against Florida on Saturday now matters. Now, will Georgia win it? Will they not? We'll find out. But at the very least, this upcoming Saturday afternoon, a game against Florida matters. Because if you win that, all of a sudden, there's a little bit different conversation happening around the Dogs as we head to the end of February going towards March. So big Georgia basketball game on Saturday for the Dogs, trying to keep momentum alive after beating Missouri earlier this week. That's a lot of fun. And the Diamond Dogs returning to the Diamond this upcoming weekend. That's what they're called, the Diamond Dogs. The Purple Aces of Evansville, three-game set there for the Dogs there against Evansville. A chance to see Scott Strickland's team. Obviously, so much frustration last year about the team that Georgia had that could have really competed for it all there in college baseball. That season was taken away the same way that all the rest of the spring sports were as well. So it's nice to see Georgia baseball getting back at it at Foley Field this weekend against Evansville, Georgia basketball against Florida. So kind of a fun weekend to think about a lot of that, and we'll call that around the doghouse here today. Before we bring on Jeff Sintel, let me also give a big shout out to my friends at Marlowe's Tavern. Speaking of fun things coming up, Marlowe's Tavern's got that for you right now when it comes to their Bayou and Bourbon event. This is one of the great things that happens at Marlowe's Tavern. Of course, they're famous for, you know, their great, you know, craft cocktails, things like that, and that's obviously going to be going on during the Bayou and Bourbon event. But Chef John Metz is also really curated a great collection of unbelievable menu items that kind of celebrate the best of the Big Easy and the Mardi Gras season and all the stuff that goes along with that. If you're watching on video, you see some beautiful images of all of that. I'm talking about roasted chicken and shrimp gumbo, New Orleans style po' boys, deconstructed jambalaya, and of course for dessert, who wouldn't love the honey bourbon bread pudding? This is going to be a great event. A little bit of bourbon, everybody loves that. Great, New Orleans themed, Louisiana themed, food items from Chef John Metz. A ton of fun. By the way, I love the Marlowe's Tavern logo there, kind of certainly done up in Louisiana style. That's a lot of fun to be able to see. So please make sure you check out marlowestavern.com to find out more about the Bayou and Bourbon event, what's going on right there at the tavern in your particular neighborhood. And I hope you'll check out Marlowe's Tavern and certainly enjoy yourself some of that here as we head towards the next couple of weeks. Really fun stuff at Marlowe's Tavern with Bayou and Bourbon. It's been a busy couple of days around news when it comes to the SEC. Controversy at Tennessee, new coach at Auburn, Brian Harsin, trying to stir the pot with Alabama. We will cover all of that before we're done. But for now, on the latest on Georgia recruiting, let's get ready to talk to Dog Nation's recruiting insider Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
So a lot to do with Jeff Sintel here today. A lot of this is going to be related to a great crop of defensive linemen that Jeff recently had a chance to speak to. Some really interesting stuff coming up from those guys at Dog Nation. But Jeff, before we get to that here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, I do want to touch on something else you had a chance to cover recently. I was out of town when this went down, but I followed it, you know, via you on social media, everything that went down with that. You know, Dylan Fairchild, one of the very impressive offensive line signees for Georgia for the class of 2021, wanted to stick around high school for his second semester, wanted a chance to go out there and win that state wrestling heavyweight, state title. And boy, he went out there and got that done, impressive fashion. I am not a wrestling expert, at least this kind of wrestling I'm not an expert on, but certainly what I saw from you certainly made the athleticism of a Fairchild really leap off the page. You covered this event live. What did you make of Fairchild as a wrestler, and what do you take about that for him as a football player as well?
Good morning, Brandon. Right. Well, first off, everybody, I mean, what's our deal here at Dog Nation? We don't just say, oh, he's a good offensive lineman that's going to play for Georgia. We try to identify the human, identify the person. And for me, Brandon, I thought this, everybody can say, yeah, this is a slow time. Nothing's going on. Well, that just depends on how hard you want to look. Because, I mean, for me, the Dylan Fairchild story was like a breath of fresh air. And I'm not just talking about, wrestling theatrics, Brandon, like moves like the cement mixer and the straight jacket and the alligator roll and the bulldog. And I mean, it was like kind of like a whole new world that opened up, but I don't know what any other way to describe it, but you can't dream up a script, a scenario, a resume for a Georgia offensive lineman to do any better in their second sport, which would be wrestling. Leverage, angles, so important for offensive linemen at the next level. But the way he did it, Brandon, like for me, and I know I'm going to be preaching to one of your favorite topics in the world to talk about. But Dylan Fairchild went Dylan Flairchild. I mean, did you see the blow and the kiss? Did you see how he smiled while he was pinning the dude? I mean, somewhere Vince McMahon has gotten video of this, and he's filing that guy away for circa 2030 or something like that, about he'd love to see him with WWE Entertainment. I mean, like we said, these guys are people, and they're real people. And I've really enjoyed following Dylan Fairchild for all the reasons besides the fact that he's an All-American football player and the number two guard in the country on 24/7 Sports and a top 50 player. Brandon, the jaw-jacking stat is Dylan Fairchild doesn't go into the second period. Everybody says, we made it to state 6 minutes at a time. Well, that's bull malarkey with Dylan Fairchild, because he makes it to state about 42 seconds at a time. And even a sport, especially the heavyweight division, where these guys paw at each other like big bears usually for the first 30 seconds of every match. But Dylan Fairchild, I think he worked probably 2 minutes and 20 seconds through the whole entire state tournament. 21-0, 21 pins. He has won almost 70 matches over the past two seasons. All of them pins. I mean, it's just devastating.
Well, what it kind of brings to mind for me is, and I'm watching some of the video right now, maybe there was a time in which offensive linemen weren't considered, and I don't mean to say this disparagingly, but, athletes, right? But if there was ever a time in which that was true, that's not true anymore. These are obviously big athletes, but the athletic component of this is a big part of playing offensive line right now. You see Fairchild wrestling, you don't see a lot of extra weight. Obviously, he'll be adding muscle, and the same way every other player does when he goes on to college. But this is not a young man who's out of shape. This is a young man who's in, tremendous physical condition and, has, leverage and the ability to move around. He's dexterous, I guess is the word I'm looking for here. It's really kind of interesting the way in which the athletic profile of SEC-level offensive linemen has kind of grown. There was a time, Jeff, when the athletic big guy was definitely a defensive lineman. But because the SEC defensive linemen are getting more and more athletic, all of a sudden you've got to have that athletic component on the offensive line side now. And Fairchild is clearly, he's a big guy, but he's a big athlete. He's more than just a mountain of a man.
Brennan, it's funny. I was asked to describe to somebody, and like a fifth grader, or I think someone said like a fifth grade Georgia fan would be able to understand it, because they don't know cement mixer and they don't know the grabs and the counters and the pulls that Dylan does. But man, Dylan basically is the Herschel Walker of high school wrestlers. You remember those cartoons we saw in the 80s where it was like there's a freight train on the other side of the line of scrimmage, and then there's a defense going up. Well, all we got to do to beat Georgia is stop Herschel Walker. And that's the defense kind of looking at that fake freight train from the other side of the ball. Well, that's Dylan Fairchild. Like, the majority of these pins, he all does the same thing. He's either going to grab you or you're going to run away from him, and you got to figure out how you react to that grab, and he knows how to do it. He's got countermeasures for both of those ways. I mean, it is, everybody's like, it's the same rinse, wash, repeat script for Dylan Fairchild, how he just annihilates these guys all the time. And, you know, Brennan, I've got one story I want to share. It hadn't showed up in our coverage yet, so maybe your audience will get a little treat today. I was talking to Dylan Fairchild recently about his decision, you know, how he made it. You know, he's kind of been counseling like Oscar Delp about when you know, you have to be there, you have to feel it. Well, he's kind of looked at his decision now with foresight, and he was like, let me think for a minute. He said, I was considering South Carolina, coaching change. What if I would have signed there? I was considering Tennessee, coaching change. What if I would have signed there? I was considering Auburn, coaching change. What if I would have signed there? So he looks at it now with all the foresight in the world, and the decision he made to go with the dominant Georgia program, the Georgia program that's standing out, that's robust and full of strength, all that made sense to him now when he looks back on his decision, because if he would have went any one of the other of those other feelings, he would have been wondering about his situation, or maybe, you know, kind of in the case of when Cody Brown at Parkview High School this week, he was released from his scholarship at Tennessee. And then Dylan told me one other thing. He was, like, looking through his stuff. He was looking through his room. I don't know if he was cleaning or whatever. And he found a letter that he wrote to himself in the fifth grade. I think he was in the fifth grade, or maybe he was 5 years old. But he said, I want to be the Georgia Bulldog. Georgia Bulldogs is where I want to go play football. That's the spot for me. It would be a dream to be able to play for Georgia. And that's Dylan Fairchild, the 285-pounder who shed 20 pounds to wrestle in the Georgia 7A heavyweight division. He's hearing from the vestiges of Dylan Fairchild way back in 5, 6, 7, 8 years of age, and him telling him that's what he needed to do all along. And that's why he couldn't – all these many reasons why, Matt Luke, that's all the many reasons why this guy was born to be a Bulldog, and he's going to be a darn good one.
So I want to shift gears to the other side of the ball here for a moment. You had a chance to be a part of a great event. Our buddy Chuck Smith, the pass rush specialist, put on for some terrific, you know, defensive line prospects, front seven prospects recently. And I love the story you have with Tyree West, the Georgia commit, who – and Jeff, you know, stuff like this really works on me. You know, West really touting what he thinks this defensive line class is going to look like for Georgia in 2022. It's obviously already, you know, got himself and Bear Alexander in it, so they're off to a great start. But West really calling for more. That's a lot of fun. And taking a step further, I love this. Him taking, like, the personal responsibility for making sure the rest of these guys, whether it be Mikael Williams or whoever else, ends up in this class. I'm going to paraphrase here. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but saying it's basically on me, West says, to make sure these guys end up here. You know, that's the kind of fun sort of, you know, touting for you know, your fellow classmates, things like that, that has really become kind of a hallmark of Georgia recruiting. I love those quotes from West. That was a really, really fun look at what's really only a couple of weeks away in some cases for some of these big names set to make their decision. I really love the way that Tyree West is already kind of fanning the flames for a lot of that.
Brendan, I think he kind of acts the way that you would if somebody did one of those Tom Hanks or Jennifer Garner movies where they you swap minds with the, yeah, you know, the brains. And this is the thing about Tyree. Man, he cuts through all the conjecture of normal recruiting coverage. He goes, I remember when I talked to him, I don't know, maybe it was last October, and he was literally like, man, I'm really feeling Georgia, probably going to commit in December. Georgia's the school. Nobody has this feeling of Georgia. It's about time for me to commit to Georgia, and I'll probably do it in December. I mean, that's kind of what it was. And now that he's a committed guy, he's like, he cuts through all that. Well, I want to let him set his top five, or I want to let him get his visits first. I mean, he is very outward and forward about, we need this guy, facts, you need to be here. Where else are you going to have a better situation with Big Bear and me? Who are they going to double on the defensive line? And you come along, and you need to be here too. And I mean, this class is great. And he's like, you're from Georgia. You need to stay at Georgia. Who else is going to be better? Where are you going to be better than you will be at Georgia? I mean, this is a guy that, I mean, maybe that's that down South Georgia boy that don't have any time for any foolishness, but that's certainly Tyree West on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to see, and obviously one of the names that he's paying attention to is Mikael Williams, who coming up in March is getting ready to make his decision. You know, I've talked a good bit lately, whether it be Cover 4 Live last night, whatever else, but the extension of the dead period, that obviously impacted Williams, but now that it's going to continue, it sounds like he's just ready to go out and, you know, make it known, and it seems like Georgia's in a pretty good place here for Williams, as good as you can be ahead of a choice for him that's really not too long from now.
Yeah, he's kind of got a group of schools. I think Florida and Georgia Tech are maybe the outliers, the wild cards, and then maybe his core group is LSU, Kentucky, Georgia. I mean, those are basically the schools that he's looking at. He likes Kentucky a lot. He got to visit Kentucky before the pandemic hit, and that was really his first only visit. I mean, Brandon, even these elite 2022s, I mean, Mikael Williams is a top 50 overall prospect. I think he's going to be a five-star likely, or a near five-star when all said and done. He's an All-American, and he really hasn't been on all the recruiting visits most might expect. You know, he's always fancied Southern Cal. Kentucky is the dark horse. There's LSU, there's Georgia. Maybe there's Florida and Georgia Tech also in there a little bit, but you know, this is a guy I think that could play the edge, could play a five technique, could play a defensive end, 6'5" and change, 260 plus, very athletic. And we saw with all those videos the get off challenge there. You know, the other thing with Mikael and Tyree and Kristen Miller, these guys are all really linked. They love link. They love being around together. They love working out together. Now, you know, I don't know whether this the 2021 pandemic recruiting cycle was the death blows for all package deal talks. But all I know is those three young men, maybe there's a different mojo when it's three guys and not two guys. But all I know is those three young men love one another. They love competing against one another, and they want to play together in college. And that fella Tyree West talks to them all the time about Georgia, about playing for Georgia. He basically makes that a constant soundbite whenever he's around those two.
How did Kentucky get involved with Williams? It's not like they don't recruit fairly well. I mean, but it's normally like a Florida or an Ohio where they seem to slip in there and kind of get involved with a prospect kind of above their weight class. What's the connection between Williams and Kentucky?
Well, Brandon, it's kind of like, let me use a metaphor that's pretty clear in your mind. What if the only amusement park you'd ever been to was the one at the county fair in Hall County growing up?
Sure. Trust me, Jeff. I was at that Hall County fair plenty of times growing up. That was about as good as it got for a young man with a very barren social calendar back in the mid '80s.
I mean, the cotton candy there probably never tasted any sweeter, but you didn't know anything about the Avatar ride or the
sure.
Rise of the Resistance. That was
sure.
maybe in this palatial place called Clark County. But, you know, it's kind of funny, Brandon. His only really recruiting visit was to Kentucky. So he got to see all their helmets, and he got to do a little bit of a photo shoot, and he got, you know, the golf cart treatment and whisked around campus. And when you have that and you don't know what else is out there, I mean, really his only experiences with Georgia is he went to two games last year. And, Brandon, I know we all bemoan and cry that the UABs, the Charleston Southerns, the Murray States. Well, one of the endearing moments for Mikael Williams in his connection and his recruitment and his interest in Georgia was, of all things, the Murray State game. So the next time you're in a stadium thinking, you know, these boosters and the McGill societies and the BA society donors all have, like, you know, 150 invested in every one of the tickets before the face value comes around, and it's maybe $20 on the street. You got to remember, there's a recruit in there, maybe a potential five-star in there that's thinking, man, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. It's even cooler than the Hall County State Fair, the Hall County County Fair that's coming twice a year. That's the reason. Brandon, this is kind of like a layer of things. It's kind of a new subculture here. When you haven't taken many visits and you got to visit in before the world changed, somehow those are remembered quite fondly. And that's what Mikael Williams is really going off on right now. You wonder how a school like Southern California can have some of those memories, or a school like LSU can have some of those memories. when all of this is still really, it's really kind of foreign and unknown to him about, you know, the things that, you know, we used to take for granted, like a five-star visiting Athens and saying, you know, I'll be back soon. You remember those stories that used to dominate the headlines or whatever, or
sure,
those visit lists for weekends or whatever? I mean, it's going to be at least 15 months before those return. And when you don't have that, the recruits kind of tend to cling to what they did have that resembled anything like that, including a Murray State game.
Yeah, it makes a ton of sense, actually. I mean, all of that makes absolute perfect sense, given the way the world has kind of evolved here over the course of the last year. Let me do one more very quick thing before we let you go. Another big name you had a chance to write about, another very impressive guy there on these defensive fronts, would be Christian Miller, a guy that you mentioned a little bit before. Obviously, his faith is paramount for him. He talked about that in your story there at DogNation.com. He's also looking at an April decision date. What would you say the current relationship is between Georgia and Miller?
I think it's a very strong relationship. Miller's just a joyous dude, Brandon. I think he would be one of the few recruits I meet that you sit there and you go, you know, if this kid's 5'8" and he's 150 pounds and, you know, was a wrestler or was a, you know, a champion FFA member or scientist, whatever you want to say, in the high school experience, you'd be impressed by him because he just has a joy. He has a light about him that radiates, but he's also 6'5" and about 275 pounds. He won the get-off challenge and Chuck Smith's get-off challenge. He beat guys like Tyree West, a field that includes Tyree West. It included Mikael Williams. It included a couple of guys that are already on their way to smaller colleges across the Southeast, lots of up-and-comers. And when you have a guy that has that ability to get off that ball so quick, you know, Christian's very talented. He could play an offensive tackle. He could be an offensive tackle prospect. Same thing with Mikael Williams if they really put their mind to it. Those guys want to hunt on the defensive line, and that's their mindset. And, you know, Christian's a very purposeful, faith-based person. He grew up in a Christian home, and he really wasn't the devout kid. He kind of had to find his own walk to connect to the same faith that his family members have, and that's why he's deciding to make his commitment date on Easter, because he wants to do that to honor the resurrection of Jesus Christ. So, I mean, for him, when you ask him that question about, you know, how does this dead period extension affect you, you know, Christian is very, very prayerful and very grounded. He's like, you know, it's not going to affect my decision. I was going to make my decision before the dead period wall was supposed to come up anyway. So it's really not going to affect him at all. He's made his decision. He's at peace with his decision. And he told me he's going to let the coaching staff know on Easter to let them know that he's locked in. But, man, all of a sudden, I don't know what you would do, Brandon, if you get to June and you don't have a whole lot of defensive line targets to talk about in the Georgia recruiting class,
yeah,
because potentially you could be quite fed and quite happy with a lot of the names that are showing up there on the board for 2022 committed recruits for the Georgia Bulldogs.
Yeah, listen, Jeff, I love what Georgia's doing at this position group right now, and I think it's a ton of fun. I already like what's in the fold for the class of 2022. The other names that we just mentioned, I think, are – boy, they're fun to think about. So I got nothing but good things to say about how all of this is going here at the moment. Obviously, March and April become months certainly worth watching when it comes to all of this kind of stuff. Jeff, thank you so much for being here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger here today. I appreciate you sharing some thoughts on this. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll look forward to reading a bunch of stuff from you there at DogNation.com, and, of course, talking to you very soon here again as well.
Hey, man, Brandon, always love being on the show. Have everybody. Everybody have a great weekend, and stay safe, everybody.
You too, Jeff. Thank you.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, so I do think it's excellent stuff. I mean, first of all, we love our buddy Chuck Smith, the former Atlanta Falcon, who, you know, a lot like Terrence Edwards, does some great, you know, work coaching up wide receivers, things like that. Chuck does that kind of stuff with front seven guys, pass rush guys. Chuck is very, very passionate about discussing the pass rush topic. So it was fun that he had the big event, invited Jeff there to be a part of that. Great to see a lot of those young men for the class of 2022 really showing what they're all about. And we just appreciate the work that we're lucky here in this kind of Atlanta area, state of Georgia, where we do the show from. They're a bunch of guys really, you know, from great football backgrounds, kind of pouring their lives into the next generation of football player. And the one thing I hope that you know that I take very seriously is Georgia can't get all of these guys, you know, all the guys that work with Terrence or Chuck or any of those people. But I don't care about that. I mean, I just like football, right? I mean, I want football players to have a chance. One of the reasons why we kind of come down hard in instances where we feel like, hey, maybe the NCAA is not being as fair as it could be to players, things like that. I want players to have opportunities. I want players to have, you know, the chance to get as good as they can, play at the highest level they're able to. So I appreciate the coaches like our buddy Chuck Smith, who's kind of doing a lot of that kind of stuff. A lot to do for our SEC through. We'll do it here in a moment. Before that, though, let me remind you about a great getaway that exists just 2 hours from Atlanta. I'm talking about Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. You can go to the original property, Harris Cherokee Casino Resort, or the Harris Cherokee Valley River. Reimagine gaming floor that takes social distancing very seriously. A gourmet dining, world-class luxurious spa, the shopping experience that really makes you feel like you're at a tremendous, you know, getaway. Just a really fun thing. I love Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. I'm excited about the book opening up, the sports book that's on its way there. That's actually due to arrive here any day now. So really fun stuff going on at Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. The best way to find out about all the great things that are happening there and to take advantage of the really great incentives that they want to give to you, become a Caesars Rewards member. Go to Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee for more on that. That's Caesars.com/Harris-Cherokee. All right, SEC through time here. So Brian Harsin, the new Auburn coach, was interviewed by Dennis Dodd from CBS Sports. And in the midst of the interview, Harsin talking about his rival, Nick Saban, Alabama, and he calls him the school up north. Now, I guess come to find out that Tuscaloosa is not actually north of Auburn. I didn't know this. When I drive to Auburn, it feels like I'm going south of Tuscaloosa. I guess maybe Tuscaloosa is more west of Auburn. That Cecil Hurt, longtime columnist for the Tuscaloosa News, put out on Twitter that if you look at the, is it latitude or longitude? The latitude that determines how north you are. That Tuscaloosa is only like a, you know, just a hair north of Auburn. So Brian Harsin already geographically challenged. That's what you get when you hire, you know, an Idaho native to come down here to the south. He doesn't exactly have his north-south thing figured out on all that. But the bigger deal for me is on Harsin saying our rival is the school up north. This has been done so many times. And if Harsin thinks that this, you know, decaffeinated jab is what's going to earn him any favor with Auburn fans against Alabama, I think Harsin's just grossly mistaken here. I think he's going to be cruising for a bruising if he thinks this is the kind of stuff that's going to work. First of all, you know, my audience doesn't like Gus Malzahn, but it's fair to point out Malzahn actually beat Saban 3 times. So Harsin's got his work cut out for him even in this rivalry as it is, and calling him the school up north, no matter where they are geographically, ain't going to cut it. I mean, a few years ago, we had Lane Kiffin, you know, essentially calling the NCAA on Urban Meyer from a stage with a bunch of Tennessee fans cheering as he did it. We had Ed Orgeron just, you know, last year attaching a stern expletive to the famous Roll Tide Alabama chant. That's what, you know, coaches in this league do when it comes to their rivals. They don't like, ooh, we're not going to say their name. That's been done 1,000 different places. That is not going to cut it for Brian Harsin. That may have worked for, you know, Boise State's big rival. What is it? Idaho, the Vandals, somebody like that. But just calling Alabama the school up north, as Harsin did in the Dennis Dodd interview, that is not going to get it done down here. By the way, speaking of Auburn, though, there is controversy in Knoxville. This is one of those things I feel like it's stories like this that ought to get to more attention. This doesn't involve Georgia at all. I've got no dog in this fight whatsoever, but fair is fair. So we told you yesterday that Cody Brown, former Parkview running back, Tennessee signee, wanted out of his Tennessee letter of intent and has been granted that. He's now in the transfer portal looking to move on. But what has also been going on simultaneous to this is, remember Dylan Brooks? We've talked about Brooks before. Brooks was a big-time gain out of the state of Alabama for Tennessee's 2021 class. But when Jeremy Pruitt got fired, Dylan Brooks also wanted out of his letter of intent. But Tennessee to this point in time has not done that. Now, the latest reporting, AL.com has written about this in the last 24 hours. 24/7 Sports has written about this in the last 24 hours. It sounds like eventually Tennessee is going to let him out of his letter of intent. But this thing has been dragging on for weeks and weeks and weeks. Brooks high school coach told the kind of the big media entity in Alabama, AL.com, that he was completely unaware of what's going on, that really over the last few weeks there had been no contact between Brooks and Tennessee whatsoever. Now, there's some Tennessee folks who say that Brooks has refused to take Tennessee's phone calls. There's, you you know, the obviously the Brooks side of this is maybe a little bit different. But the point is, it certainly seems like that Brooks wants out of his letter of intent, and there is some belief here that he'd like to go to Auburn, and Tennessee holding the cards here because they do have the signed LOI in hand is maybe trying to negotiate a situation where, you know, you will let you out of the letter of intent, but you've got to agree not to go to an SEC school, which to me, for in Brooks's case, just seems completely unfair given the fact that all the stuff involving McDonald's bags and cash, Jeremy Pruitt getting fired, everything like that, all of this happened after Brooks signed at Tennessee. And obviously for Josh Heupel, who's already been criticized for pulling scholarships, things like that, I would say this is another blight on his early days as Tennessee coach. But beyond that, let me make just one point very, very, very quickly. If you really look at, and I'm no lawyer, but if you really look at the letter of intent that these players sign, that's a pretty tough contract for the player. You are really agreeing to surrender a lot of rights. And, you know, for the most part, I'm in favor of stability for college football. I don't think you can have, like, Wild West transfers. We talked about that a lot over the last couple of days. But these programs have got to be really careful about abusing these letters of intent. Because if you incentivize players not to sign them, because obviously you don't have to sign one to play at a school. Roquan Smith has a friend. I don't think he ever signed a letter of intent. You don't have to sign a letter of intent to play college football. It's just good for the programs when the players do. But if programs like Tennessee, in this case led by new coach Josh Heupel, if they abuse the letter of intent to essentially, you know, manipulate Dylan Brooks here, other recruits are going to notice this. That's going to eventually become a problem for everybody. You know, this is not a good look for Tennessee. I think the cavalier way in which Josh Heupel, the new coach, is behaving has the potential negative impact on other programs as well. Letters of intent work well as long as programs don't abuse it. In the case of Dylan Brooks here, pretty good pass rusher, you know, signee for Tennessee. Certainly seems like the Vols may be abusing that a little bit. A couple other quick stories here. Looks like Florida is going to be out a key defender for spring practice, Jeremiah Moon, defensive lineman, linebacker type guy. Missed a lot of time in 2020, but has had some sacks in his Florida career. Seems like he's set to miss spring practice there. So a little bit of an injury setback for the Gators. Alabama, Nick Saban kind of talking up Jay Valai, who you may remember at one point in time was briefly, at least rumor mill, had connected him to the defensive backs opening at Georgia. He had gone to the Philadelphia Eagles, but he's now coming back to Alabama's defensive backs coach, going to work with the cornerbacks in particular there. Nick Saban's kind of touted him. I mean, Valai seems like a really good coach. I am very happy with what Georgia hired with its own guy there in Jamal Adai. So one of the names that at one point in time you thought might be in the mix for Georgia, now at Alabama. Bama's appeared to have made a pretty good hire here, but frankly, I think Georgia made a pretty good hire too. And just as a quick follow-up before we finish our SEC through, we talked yesterday about the NCAA's decision to extend the dead period for recruiting. You know, coaches not able to travel and visit, players not able to come to programs and visit. Ross Bjork, who's always a fairly outspoken athletic director at Texas A&M, has certainly spoken out pretty heavily against the extension of this dead period. I think most athletic directors, at least in the SEC, are going to probably agree. Here's the statement from Bjork. He says, "This is very disappointing. We've made many advancements in protocols like rapid testing and social distancing measures to safely host families and prospects on our respective campuses. If we don't have a clear plan for June 1, that's the next time that they can kind of reconsider this after it was extended through the month of May. He says, we are doing many young people a disservice. It's time, Ross Bjork says. And I think that's absolutely right. Of all the things that programs have been asked to do over the course of the last year, safely hosting recruits is far easier than many of the other challenges that these athletic departments are taking on, you know, right now in this moment. Hosting a basketball season is much more difficult from a logistics standpoint, I would almost have to assume. And yet this dead period continues to be extended over and over again, 8 times I think it's now been extended. So in my mind, good for Ross Bjork, the A&M AD, stepping up and criticizing what I think is a policy absolutely worthy of criticism, and we'll make that your SEC through. So yesterday when we did our Gatorade roll call and our Golden Shoe winner, we honored Mad Dog 19, and I said during the the giveaway there. We can bring the music down just a little bit if you don't mind. I said during the giveaway that Mad Dog's quickly kind of becoming the Ric Flair of the Golden Shoe, many time winner. Well, Mad Dog had a great response to that on Twitter. He gives you the Ric Flair with the golden shoes in his hand. He says, like it or don't like it, you better learn to love it. I absolutely love that from my buddy Mad Dog there. The old school Saturday Night 605 on WTBS with Ric Flair, really good stuff. I also want to give out another golden shoe winner today there as well. See Benson Green putting this out on Twitter. Ben Green, really good looking movie poster here. 99 returns. You got Jordan Davis ripping an alligator apart. Obviously, Davis didn't get to play against Florida this past season. Ben Green calls this the sequel. He's even got Eddie on Jordan Davis' shoulder there. That's well done by Ben. We'll make you the golden shoe winner. By the way, Gator Hater Countdown going to Jacksonville. 253 days from right now. Getting some revenge on those lousy, stinking Gators. Y'all have a great weekend, everybody.